Congratulations, you have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the LAM. The LAM is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the LAM community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the LAM and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 563 of the Lambcast. I am your host, Todd Liebenow from Forgotten Films, the Forgotten Filmcast, and the Walt Sent Me podcast. Richard is away this week, but he has turned things over to me for this week's show. And of course, with it being the holiday time of year, you know, this is a time of year that conjures up special memories of our childhoods. So on this week's episode, we are going to be taking a look specifically at movies and TV specials that were childhood favorites of ours during the holiday season. I know normally the Lambcast, we are primarily about movies, but we are going to open things up to TV offerings on this show. I probably could have done this whole show myself just with stuff that involves the Muppets, but Richard thought it might be better to bring a bunch of other guests along with me here to share their five favorite childhood movie or TV memories. So joining me this time, we have, fresh from her visit to the Island of Misfit Toys from Metal Ray and Across the Universe, it's Getter Trumsey.
Hello.
Hello, Getter. Taking a break from celebrating Life Day alongside Lumpy the Wookiee from the MILFcast and Header Time, we've got Heather Baxendale Walsh.
Happy birthday!
And next up, since his parents accidentally left him in the attic while they jetted off to Paris for the holiday, he is able to join us, Damian Riley from Riley on Film.
Oh, yes. Hello. Glad to be here, Todd.
Hello, Damian. And then last, we have it well documented that his heart is, in fact, two sizes too small. From Cinema Recall, it's the Vern.
Ho, ho, ho! I'm sorry to announce that the Vern is going to be late, but it's me, Santa Claus. Want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas. It began to look a lot like my birthday. Everywhere I go, Happy Christmas, everybody. How are you doing today, Todd?
Apparently, Vern had an encounter with someone crawling on his rooftop, put on the suit, and there we are. So, yes. All right, so we are each going to go through...
I am the Santa Claus.
Okay, I believe you. I believe
you. What an Have you been a, right. Have been a good boy?
Have I been a good boy?
Yes.
I've always been a good boy. Absolutely. I'm filling in on the Lambcast here, so that is good in somebody's book.
Okay.
Richard's, if nobody else. So.
I'm glad to hear that.
All right. So now we're going to cover each of us five of our favorite childhood memories associated with movies, TV specials, things like that. Kind of like a roll your own top five episode, though we're not really ranking them necessarily. It's just kind of, you know, five memories that we have. So we'll each kind of take our two turns and go around, each do one, and then we'll cycle back and so on and so on. So, boy, I'm not sure who we should have go first here. How about Heather, why don't you go first?
All right. I'll start with an oldie but a goodie. One of my favorites from childhood, and I would have to say the one that I have absolutely watched the most, is the TV special, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, yes, the Rankin-Bass.
Yes, yes. And I realize that it has not aged very well, but I still absolutely adore it. I could recite the movie from beginning to end, terribly, of course, but I could do it if I tried. This one was one of the that we did watch every single Christmas, every year in our house. And our house, well, let's just say it wasn't always the cheeriest place, but during Christmas time, it was kind of special. My parents seemed a little bit more jovial and everybody got in the spirit. We decorated a lot. So, and the movies were a big part of that celebration. But Rudolph is the pinnacle. It was the one that meant, okay, Christmas is here. And I think it played on regular TV every year, too. I think it always backed up with Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was always special to me. And then when my first son was born, I think he was maybe a year old. A little bit older, maybe a year and a half. And I think I played it maybe 100 times that holiday season. He watched it over and over again. And for anyone else that has children, you know that your children, when they go through the ages of maybe 2 to 4, they tend to fixate on a specific movie or show, and rewatch is a bit difficult. But we watched this over and over. It was again, Rudolph, Herbie, Bumble's Bounce. So,
yes.
So I got to kind of relive all of that joy that I had as a child from it and all that magic with it. It's not Christmas unless we watch Rudolph. And even today, he's 17 years old and he still asks to watch it every year. So it has sentimental value past the point of, well, it came out in the 50s and this is man's work. But it's also a fun story about misfits finding their way in the world and being accepted for who they are.
Yeah, yeah, it's a fun one. I definitely watched it every year when it aired. There was a whole series of those Rankin Bass specials. Maybe more of them will come up as we go here. But I think Rudolph is probably one of the best ones out of those. It just has this unique outlook on the whole mythology of Rudolph. You know, I mean, Rudolph is just, you know, based on this song, but they build this whole thing with the, you know, the island of misfit toys and this elf that wants to be a dentist and all these weird things that are a part of it. The thing that always bothered me about that show, though, was just how cruel the other reindeer are to Rudolph. You know, it's disturbing.
It is, but at the same time, children aren't that cruel to each other. And I think that's maybe why little kids did probably connect to it in that way, too, especially if you've felt that yourself at all or felt like an outcast at all. And then on top of it, you have, you know, all the magic and all of that good stuff. But I always thought it was neat too, that apparently Santa had been around for a millennia. And at some point, and he didn't have Rudolph for a while.
Now, and isn't this the one too, where, you know, like Santa is like thin as a twig through part of the film and he has to bulk up,
eat. Yes.
Yeah. Very good, very good.
I really want you to talk more about Santa Claus Comes to Town. That is Santa's favorite sexploitation flick.
Well, Vern or Santa Claus, it is your turn up next. So, yeah, what is one of your favorites?
Well, I know the Vern has Santa, I'm here. Sorry, guys, I'm late. I hope I did all right for you, Vern. Yes, Santa, you did just fine. Your money's in the mail. Sorry, guys. Hi, I'm Vern. I'm back. Hope you all missed me as you did. So my favorite memory, so I apologize. I do have a cat in my room here who's bothering the hell out of me.
Oh, hello, kitty.
That's Sunshine. Hello. We'll talk about Sunshine's favorite Christmas memory. But one of my top memories of Christmas is with my family. And every year we put on a different movie trilogy. Now, before movies became franchises, which spun off to series and all a bunch of other stuff, there was the movie trilogy. And this started off with one of the best trilogies of all time. We did Die Hard trilogy. So we did Die Hard 1, Die Hard 2, Die Hard with a Vengeance. The next year, we did Star Wars. And we watched all three Star Wars movies. I'm talking about, yes, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. Not A New Hope. Nope, it was just Star Wars. And it was on old dubbed VHS tapes that were crappy in quality, but the heart was in quantity, and we just loved it. So then each year we did a different movie trilogy or movie series. We did Alien and Aliens because at the time that's all there was. But yeah, we just put on a different movie trilogy, and it's been just a family tradition growing up when I was young all the way through up to like college. Yeah.
So you kind of started with a series that is somewhat Christmas related because the first two Die Hards are Christmas films, but then moved on. I almost brought that up earlier to say that, you know, not necessarily all Christmas movie memories are going to be things that are necessarily Christmas material. Because, like, I know Jay often talks about how in the UK, it's a Christmas tradition that they show The Great Escape on TV. And that's one of his favorite movies. And so, yeah, there's those those Christmas movie connections we have with things that aren't necessarily Christmas stories. So yeah, that's awesome. You say you continue this. What's on the docket for this year?
Well, we do, but we've actually changed it right now. Now, when I visit my family with the niece and nephews, now we're doing Christmas horror movies. So we do a different Christmas horror movie or something Christmas horror or Christmas family related. So I think the first year we watched Gremlins. Then the following year we watched Krampus. Then the next year we watched Hereditary. And then the last year we watched Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, that one was great. That was fun.
So yeah, but Hereditary was a very kind of different family movie to watch. Because I told my parents and my niece and nephews that never saw Hereditary. And I said, yeah, it's a horror movie about a family. Their grandmother dies and then like weird thing happens. That's all I can tell you about it. And yeah, just their reaction to that movie was just kind of like priceless because they didn't much like me after seeing that movie.
I'm wondering the age of your nieces and nephews here. I almost don't want to know.
My nephews, they don't like to watch any movies, so they kind of were in the room. My niece at the time, I think, yeah, she was 17.
Oh yeah, that's
all right.
Fine.
I can deal with that. All right, very good, very good. All right, Getter, you're up next. What's your first pick?
All right. So first of all, I do want to apologize that I didn't have the time to rewatch them. My memory is a bit hazy from childhood. So this is just based off on not, I don't think like facts, but emotions. Sure. And for me, I think in our household, we had like New Year's staples instead of Christmas staples. So all the movies that I thought of, I was like, no, we watched it on New Year's. No, that's also New Year's. So I had to really like think through what we watched during Christmas because it's like a 3-day holiday and we watched a lot of different movies. I remember we borrowed like 20 VHSs before Christmas and then watched it all in like 3 days. It's very hazy, guys. I don't, all the movies kind of blend in together by the end. But I do remember, my first pick that during Christmas, we always watched, Mr. Bean.
Oh, yes.
Everyone talks about that. I want to see this.
This is, there's a YouTube, link. I think there's Merry Christmas, Mr. Bean, Christmas special, Mr. Bean full episodes. It's an hour and 33 minutes and 8.5 million people have watched it. Well, 8.5 million times. So it's still very loved. I guess it was posted last year, in this, 22nd of December, 2019. So in a year, it has gained almost 9 million views. So yeah, Mr. Bean, there's just something about that dude. He's a man with few words, but somehow he manages to kind of end up in situations that always make me laugh. And it's just something good to be on the background while you're having dinner with the family or something. There's just a guy part of your family as well. And yeah, it's like, and he has a lot of different, I think I remember we watched him also on New Year's. There's a lot of Mr. Bean in my childhood during holidays.
Yeah, I love Mr. Bean. I remember when they first started that, I don't remember, what exactly the time frame was. I want to say it was the early 90s or so. And they would play episodes of Mr. Bean, if I remember correctly, on our PBS station in Chicago late night on like Sunday nights. And then, gradually I started to experience it more and more. And it's one of those things that I love to introduce people to who have never heard of it, and especially people that are not necessarily into like British humor or things like that. I say, oh, here, you got to sit down and watch this. And they just laugh uncontrollably. It's so satisfying when you get to turn someone on to Mr. Bean for the first time.
Yeah. And it's so memorable. It's just physical comedy. Like I remember one specific, I don't think it's like Christmas related, but he goes on a holiday and he has to pack and he can't fit everything into the suitcase. I remember so many details about that one segment and the punchline, and I still laugh at it because it's just, there's no words. He's just there trying to fit everything into a suitcase, and it's funny.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I think I saw somewhere just in the last week or so that a bunch of the Mr. Bean episodes ended up on one of the streaming services here in the U.S. I don't remember if it was Amazon Prime or one of the free sites like Tubi or Pluto or something like that. I don't know if the Christmas one's in there, but I know it hit one of the streaming services here just recently. So awesome. All right, Damian, you're up. What's your first pick?
All right, then. Well, mine is one that has been redone, so I just want to make sure we're talking about the same one. It's Miracle on 34th Street. And I just want to make sure I have the year right. 47, from 1947. And you have Maureen O'Hara. You have John Payne. So I just want to make sure nobody confuses it with the more recent one, because I'm not a huge fan of that one. But this film is such a great Christmas classic, you guys. Has anybody seen it?
I am ashamed to admit I have never seen the original all the way through. I need to remedy that. It's on Disney Plus right now because Disney now owns it through Fox. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We watched it on Thanksgiving, actually, at my grandma's usually.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, as is true with most films from our childhood, we attach memories based on, you know, things going on in our home, things, you know, whatever our parents wanted to watch, things like that. I found that my wife and I, we have a lot of differences in our childhood film memories because her parents had different tastes than my parents. but anyhow, this one, my parents were playing all the time. You have the black and white retro props, which weren't retro in the 40s. And in other words, the props are all real. Beyond that, you have a timeless story with powerhouse and legendary actors. This is one of those family films that has appeal for both kids and adults. It's written in such a way that there's something for everyone to relate with. For example, there is a drunk imitation Santa who gets his just desserts. There's a young man who plays Santa as part of the union and gets advice from the man himself. I love that scene. There's a hardened divorcee trying to raise her daughter without make-believe, and her suitor bachelor who sees a flaw in that. Finally, among many entertaining characters is Kris Kringle, the man who almost gets committed to an asylum for claiming he is Santa Claus. Finally, there is a romance here, and I got my wife into the movie for that mostly. She's a big romance fan. Along with a court drama, intelligent comedy, and a hint of childhood Christmas magic that I recommend to all.
Yeah, like I said, I feel bad that I have never gotten to watch this. I know that it aired like every year. We had a show in Chicago that was on like Sunday afternoons on WGN. They called Family Classics. And I seem to remember that they would often show Miracle on 34th Street at Christmas time on that program. I would say I seem to remember that history has it that this was actually not a Christmas movie, you know, in terms of its release. Yeah, actually, I'm looking it up right now. It was released in May of 1947. Just goes to show how studio marketing teams do things much differently now, for sure. But
yes, absolutely, because it's the big, you know, shopping at Macy's, and you've seen some version of it, right? You know,
I have. I've seen the 90s version. In fact, I remember when that came out. It was right after I had moved to Denver here in 1994. And somehow I don't remember where I was, but someone just gave me a couple of passes to go see the remake of Miracle on 34th Street about 2 months prior to it opening, because it was like an advanced screening type of thing. And I was excited about it because John Hughes wrote it. And of course, being a child of the 80s, I was down for anything that John Hughes had anything to do with. And, you know, the remake is charming. It's perfectly fine. I can't compare it to the original, of course, because I haven't seen it. But, you know, I understand people have mixed feelings about the remake version, but it's harmless, I guess, is my opinion.
That's good. In kind of a roundabout way, you might say it's, because I know you're into black and whites, Todd. Mm-hmm. I know you like the black and white times. Sort of a Twilight Zone, an original Twilight Zone versus one of these new Twilight Zones.
You sure. Know?
Yeah. So that's how I'd classify it. It's the stuff. It's the original stuff. Yeah.
So Santa turns into a monster at the end?
Yeah. And then there's
so on both words. I do need to watch both versions, Damien. I have not seen either version. In fact, there's a lot of Christmas classic movies that I have never seen. I still have not seen It's a Wonderful Life, which I now found on Prime, which I will watch this week.
Oh, my gosh. You better.
I think there's actually a third version of Miracle on 34th Street that came maybe in like the 70s, which was a made-for-TV version, I want to say. But, yeah. All right. Well, my first pick here, I'm just going to get this out of the way first because I'm not going to make the case that this is good by any stretch of the imagination, but we're talking about nostalgia. We're talking about memories, and this is a memory of mine. I am one of those people that can say I was there and watched the one and only legal showing of the Star Wars Holiday Special when it aired in November of 1978.
Oh, wow.
You know, it is awful, of course, but
it's really awful. Is it?
Well, here's the thing, okay? I know that now you can go on YouTube and watch this thing. And I have gone and I have looked at a few things. I have never been able to bring myself to actually watch the whole thing again because I think it's partially just I want to hold on to my memory of being a kid and enjoying it because I was 7 years old and I didn't know any better, you know. But, you know, I remember I was at my grandparents' house the night that this aired, which is kind of appropriate because my grandmother was one of the biggest kind of supporters of my Star Wars habit when I was a kid. You know, she bought me my first Star Wars toys. She went to like every department store in the Chicago area looking and looking for the action figure for the Jawa, which was like the last one I needed to get the full original set of action figures. And she just knocked herself out trying to find it. So watching this at my grandparents' house was probably pretty appropriate. But I mean, all the things that you hear about how just weird and awful this is are completely true. I mean, you've got these goofy looking Wookiees in there celebrating Life Day. You've got like B. Arthur and Harvey Korman doing weird things in this. They've got these musical breaks from Jefferson Starship. So it's just strange. I think the only thing that people really say is, you know, somewhat interesting about it is the animated segment, which is where Boba Fett first was introduced to the world. But, you know, I think it's more of a novelty just because it was so hard to find for years. You know, I mean, like I said, this was 78. So this is before every house had a VCR. There were only a few VCRs out there. You know, it wasn't until about 82, 83 that everybody started getting VCRs for Christmas. So nobody recorded it. It aired once and that's all we were ever, you know, able to see. And so, you know, it holds a special place in my memory because of being such a big Star Wars geek and watching it at the time. But I wholeheartedly admit it is a dark spot on Star Wars history.
I understand why it holds a special place to you. And I actually think it's kind of cool that you won't watch it again. I didn't know it existed. I wasn't born until 81. I didn't. And Star Wars was like the religion of my house growing up. So I had no idea it even existed until I was, I think, 23. And my brother-in-law said, I told you about this. And he gave it to me as though he was giving me something very secret. And it was a burned DVD, which at the time was also something that people just didn't necessarily have. So I put it in and watched it. And I was like, dumbfounded. I mean, it really is a dumpster fire, but it's a wonderful dumpster fire. And I haven't watched it again since then either. And I know it's available, but the experience of seeing it then and not having known anything about it at that point was kind of like this neat little experience that I had with it too. So, yes, terrible, but at the same time, I absolutely adore it. I get it.
I know I've seen, like, reviews of the movie online where they make fun of it and they play clips of it, but I have not seen the whole thing. I do know they have, like, remastered HD versions of it via YouTube, and so I'm very kind of curious to watch that. I might watch that and the Lego Holiday Star Wars Special in, like, one go.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And, of course, Life Day is now canon, thanks to the Mandalorian. So
yes.
Correct.
There you go.
So thanks to the Star Wars Christmas special, without that, there may be no Mandalorian.
If you want to believe that, Vern, it's go for it.
I'm not the only one, though. The Star Wars Christmas special connects to the Mandalorian. So all you Mandalorian fans out there, give respect to the Star Wars Christmas special, because without that show, there would be no Mandalorian. So yes, you're welcome, Internet. Send all hate mail to me.
Okay, Heather, you're up next. What's your second pick?
Okay, I actually, since you used that one, we'll kind of go into one that I have that is similar. My favorite cartoon growing up, and it wasn't really growing up, it was just for a few years each, was He-Man and She-Ra.
I remember this. Yeah,
they were my absolute favorite cartoons to watch on Saturday mornings, and I was obsessed with both. One Christmas, I was very, very lucky to get all the She-Ra action figures, and it was still, in my memory, one of the greatest Christmases for me ever. So I had no idea that there was a Christmas special until my mother told me, and she said, guess what? We can watch a He-Man and She-Ra. And I'm like, that's not real. Oh, my goodness. I swear my child brain just exploded. But what happened was I grew old, and I killed a lot of brain cells and had forgotten all about it until, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. And I watch it every single year. It is not particularly great, but it's really cool because it has both the He-Man and She-Ra cast. They come together. There's time travel. there's dimension travel. There's Skeletor finding the Christmas spirit, which is still one of my favorite Christmas themes ever. I don't want to be nice. I want to be evil. I mean, it is so wonderful. I have no idea if anybody else will ever appreciate this, but it's actually so much fun. And they bring in all the side characters, the villains, everybody, all the gadgets, all the creatures. And I mean, they literally just kind of shove it all in there together. And it almost pokes fun at itself, which is why I think it's so great. But I watch it every year now. It's wonderful. Well,
Heather, I ask you, is there a scene in this? Do they sing?
There is some singing.
Yes.
Not fun, like, but there is some singing, yes.
Like original songs or like Christmas songs?
They're like original songs that they kind of sing during the show. It's not like it's musical-esque or anything like that.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That is pretty awesome. I kind of want to watch this. Can I believe that?
I think it's only 45 minutes, too. I think it's one of those shorter specials.
Sweet. I do think that He-Man and She-Ra were sort of like the ancestors for Hercules and Xena.
Yeah, good point.
Like, if they ever had, like, I swear, you could just change those costumes around, and it would have been He-Man and She-Ra versus Hercules and Xena. So,
I think the original concept behind the whole Masters of the Universe toys was the He-Man was designed to be an action figure of Arnold Schwarzenegger as Conan. But then, of course, the movie was so violent, so R-rated, that they were like, we can't put out toys based on Conan.
What?
And so they shifted and changed it into this He-Man thing. That's always been my understanding of the legend, but I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't think you're wrong either, because that rings true in my head as well.
Yeah, but in the 80s, they also had Rambo toys and RoboCop toys.
But those were always based on the animated TV series version, not the R-rated movie version. You know, it's like, you know, Rambo, you know, the Rambo cartoons like Captain Planet with guns.
They also had Less Than Zero toys, where you got a very coked up Robert Downey Jr.
I don't remember that.
Remember that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Robert Downey comes with heroin.
He comes with his old Vader Christmas snow.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Vern, what's your second pick?
Well, I'm actually going to tie into what you talked about earlier, Todd, with the Star Wars Christmas special, because like Heather, I had no idea that show existed until I was in my late 20s. And it was always this like hidden thing, because the only thing I remember about Star Wars and Christmas was this vinyl record that my family played every Christmas season, and that was Christmas in the Stars.
I've got it on CD, yes.
Okay. Well, maybe not CD, okay. I know I can find songs of it on YouTube, but I remember this soundtrack being played everywhere. And it's basically just C-3PO and R2-D2 talking about Christmas, and there's like Christmas tape songs. My favorite song off the whole album is What Do You Give a Witchy for Christmas?
When he already has a comb, yeah.
When he already has a comb, yes.
Yes. That is my favorite on the album, too. I have included that in Christmas playlists many times.
It's got this, like, I don't know. Is it the Jawas who are singing the song or the droid? I forget who's singing the song, but it's just got this weird robot-y type voice. And if you get a chance to look that song up, it's great. Apparently, in the beginning of the song, they talk about what to give gifts for everyone else in the Star Wars family, and they don't know what to give Chewbacca because they already gave him a comb for last year. And that's all. I mean, dudes, you can give Chewbacca, like, hair products, you know? Give him some curlers, all right? Chewbacca ones look pretty. Give Chewbacca, like, you know, a fro, okay? Because I'm pretty sure this came out in the 70s. Yeah, give Chewbacca a fro. He looked good with that, you know? Give him a mullet. Give him different hairstyles right there. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they should have done the, you know, Star Wars holiday special based on this thing. It is one of those wild, fun Christmas albums. I have a soft spot in my heart for just oddball Christmas albums or tracks, you know. Like, I also have the Brady Bunch Christmas album, which is also just, you know, really weird. And then, of course, my favorite Christmas track is the Cheech and Chong thing, that, Santa Claus and His Old Lady. If you've never heard Santa Claus and His Old Lady, it's wonderful. But the thing I love about this Star Wars Holiday of the Stars album is that it's Anthony Daniels as C-3PO. I mean, it's not like they just got some guy to do a fake C-3PO voice. It just goes to show how all in Anthony Daniels is on everything Star Wars. It's like, oh, well, hey, if you're going to do it, I got to do it. You know, he's not above any of that stuff. It's great.
And I guess I'll lump it into, you know, other Christmas vinyl, but the other Christmas album I remember listening to, and I want to find this record so badly. It was called A Chipmunk Christmas, and it was basically the audio version of the special, the animated special, which to this day I have never seen. I only have just heard the audio recording of it on vinyl, where they play like a little clip of a dialogue and then a song, and they kind of told the whole story of that special in audio format, and I just love that. Completely. I wanted to find that so bad. I'm trying to look on like Amazon and eBay, but it's like $70. I don't have that money.
Oh, very good. That's great, Vern. Going kind of beyond the movies and TV, Christmas albums are a lot of fun too. So thank you for sharing that one. All right, Getter, you're up next.
All right. Now I wished I put on some music as a kid, but I didn't listen to a lot of Christmas songs.
Come on, it's lovely weather for us. Let's ride together with you. Outside the friends are cold and someone say yoo-hoo.
We should have known. Vern always sings on these episodes, so we should have known.
All right.
I chimed in. I did. I think.
Okay. I don't know this song. For me, most of my picks are 90s, so it's going to be, because that's my childhood, and I have one movie only from the 80s, so I'm not, think I'm from a different generation.
I think we have a bit of a spectrum here. I mean, I grew up in the 70s, you know, 70s and 80s, so yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but my second pick, I remember almost nothing about this, but I asked my mother, what movie did we watch during Christmas? And her reply was, that Tim Allen one. So I Googled Tim Allen, and I got the Santa Claus. So apparently I watched a lot of the Santa Claus. I just remember that he turns into a Santa Claus. He gets fat at some point, I think. He grows a white beard. I remember nothing else about the movie. But yeah, apparently I watched that as a kid. I think it's 94, if I'm not mistaken, or 90.
Yeah, yeah. It was the same year as the Miracle on 34th Street remake. So, yeah.
All right. So, yeah, I was five at that time. So I was born right before the 90s, so 89. So technically an 80s kid. but yeah, I watched that apparently, and I remember nothing of it. And I don't know if I want to watch it again. I don't think it will have the same charm, I think, as it did maybe. But yeah, who knows? Maybe if I have kids one day.
you could watch the other movies in the series. There's like three or four.
It is a trilogy, yeah.
Or Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't recommend that, though.
No, but you see, I actually like to torture myself. I'm watching 24 bad Christmas movies in 24 days. So,
goodness. Do it. Go for it.
Yeah, but I think the Santa Claus is too good to be a torture movie, technically. It's kind of like mediocre, I think. So it's not exactly the right one.
See, I like the Santa Claus. I think the first one is legit fun.
It hasn't aged magically well, but I mean, I watched it this year for the first time in a few years, and it's still nice.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun things about it, and I think it does something really clever with just kind of the mythology in terms of, you know, how Santa Claus continues on and on for hundreds of years. It's strangely dark, though, the fact that, you know, Santa Claus falls off the roof and dies, and this is a Disney film, folks. Yeah. Okay, so and yeah, I mean, the sequels, you know, I think if I remember correctly, Santa Claus 2 has some charming moments too. Santa Claus 3 gets kind of crazy, but Martin Short is in it as Jack Frost, and you know, Martin Short is one of those guys where even when the movie is a bit off the rails, I can watch Martin Short. You know, he's
that's
fun.
Fair.
I think I would like it more if I had any memory of it. I have a lot of like 90s nostalgic movies that I watch that I know that are not that good, but I still love them because I have the memories. But with this one, I hardly remember anything. Maybe I will if I rewatch it, though.
Well, I remember when
Tim Curry is Santa Claus. Now, there is something I'd like to see.
Tim Allen, sorry. I do remember the part in the Santa Claus when Tim Allen goes to meet his neighbor and you can't see his face because it's covered by a fence and talks about problems with the wife.
That's, I think that happens.
Right. Vern, drugs are bad. What? Drugs are bad, Vern.
What?
That's Home Improvement, that show that he was on, yes.
Oh, okay. They were on the same time?
It's very true. There was the trifecta of child mullets on that show. And that about sums it up.
Trifecta of childhood mullets on this very Christmas day. Sorry.
All right. Damien, what is your next pick?
All right. Well, the next one's kind of going outside the box a little bit. My family, in the last, I want to say, about 8 or 9 years, I think, excuse me, has watched Nacho Libre every Christmas. So it doesn't, I checked it out. Doesn't really fit Christmas in any way, except that fact. So if anybody, you know, out there likes to watch Nacho Libre at Christmas, I'd love to hear from you. If not, I recommend it to everybody. There are so many quotes from Nacho Libre that your friends probably used and you don't even realize it. So if you haven't seen it, definitely you got to see it. But yeah, it's like putting on It's a Wonderful Life in my
there's something I never thought I heard. Nacho Libre, it's just like It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a laugh a minute and we all get the jokes and we've all seen it 100 times, so it's one of our Christmas movies. So
I don't know, is it like a tradition in any part of the world to watch that style of wrestling on Christmas, you know? I mean...
Or that style of parody of that style of wrestling.
Well, Damien, I want to ask you, like, do you serve any special food or drinks going on the Nacho Libre? I mean, do you actually have nachos?
Yeah, we call DoorDash and we just order a bunch of nachos from Taco Bell.
You should do nachos from all over. Taco Bell, Taco John, other.
Well,
like,
that's just his name, okay?
That's true.
Oh, there are some nachos in it. They just don't have any cheese on them, yeah.
Well, neither does I don't think Taco Bell has any real meat either. I don't think they have any real food.
That's true. Hey, as I leave this oddity to you, let me just quote one thing I love to say. I know my clothes may have the appearance of riches, but beneath the clothes you find a man, and beneath the man you find his. Anybody know it?
I do not. I was in the movie once.
No one knows. Nucleus. You find the nucleus. Okay. I can't believe no one knew that.
I've only seen it once, too, so yeah.
It helped.
I want to be like your John Candy to your Dill Griffin to your Neil Page and, like, come over to your house for Christmas one year.
Yeah, you should.
So I'd watch this with your family.
Yeah, you should, man. We have a good time. But we put it on, like, all the time. We have Alexa, so everybody in my family will just flop down with their snack and say, Alexa, play Nacho Libre, and you put it on.
Now everybody listening to this show, their Alexa's just turned on Nacho Libre. Thank you so much, David.
That's funny. I didn't even mean that, folks.
All right. So for my next pick, I decided to go with something that it's almost not childhood because it's right at the end of my childhood. This was from 1989, so I was 18, but I consider this so iconic, and it's the pilot episode of a all-time great TV show for me. The pilot episode of The Simpsons was a Christmas special. It's called Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire, and aired on December 17th, 1989. And, you know, this is just, to me, one of the great Christmas episodes of a TV show. It's a little strange to watch it now because it is the first episode, and you know the first season of any show is often so different from where the show eventually goes, and The Simpsons did evolve and change quite a bit, especially in the seasons right after this. But it's so much fun just kind of to see the beginnings of this form of the Simpsons. I mean, when we watched this originally, we had no idea that this was going to become the cultural phenomenon that it became. You know, we didn't know it was going to be a series that was going to last for 30 years. We didn't know that, you know, there was just going to be all kinds of stuff, you know, merchandising and all this, you know, stuff with the Simpsons. We just knew these were these weird yellow characters that were on the Tracy Ullman show, you know?
And yeah.
So, so glad you said that because I was just sitting here. I'm 51, so there's no mystery. But yeah, I remember that was on TV and the Simpsons were on it. So that's a trip to think back to that.
Yeah. And it's a good episode. I mean, you know, it's different than the others. I mean, it doesn't quite have the same level of like the irreverent comedy of you know the Simpsons as it moved on. At the same time, it's got a bit of a sweeter side that some you know versions of the Simpsons don't really have much anymore. So you know, but you know, you still got some of the type of things you know the Simpsons for. I mean, like, I love that Bart's idea of the perfect Christmas gift for his mother is to go get a tattoo that says "Mother," you know, and that then causes you know financial problems for the family and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, this is a fun episode. I love revisiting it. It's a great kickoff to this long running show.
Yeah, Todd, I want to like mention too what David and you mentioned about the Tracy Ullman show. When this Christmas special came out, we always thought that it was just a one special.
Yeah.
We had no idea that it was going to turn into a series. We just thought, oh, well, because on the Tracy Ullman show, folks, for those of you that are too young to really know, The Simpsons started off as like really short 2-minute clips between commercials on the show called The Tracy Ullman Show, which was this sketch comedy show. And they play these little cartoon clips featuring this family. And so when they announced that they're going to do a whole half-hour episode about The Simpsons, we were like, well, wow, is that – because The Simpsons were the most popular part of The Tracy Ullman Show, as we
– yeah, pretty quickly,
as we
yeah.
know right there. And so to have a whole half-hour episode was just really good, and I like all the characters. It was funny, but like you mentioned too, Todd, it was actually kind of sweet and heartwarming in a lot of places. And it's fun to go back and look at how shows evolved. So if you haven't seen this one, I do recommend it.
Yeah, and it's just wild. As I was thinking about this, I thought back to, you know, just kind of the explosion, the cultural phenomenon that happened after this aired.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, Vern and Damien, I'm sure you probably remember like I do, you know, in the months that followed this, there was that wave of the illegitimate Bart Simpson t-shirts that you would just find everywhere. You know, like I was in college, and anytime you'd go down to the cafeteria, there was some guy with a table selling Simpsons, you know, t-shirts that were not licensed. They were, you know, just these crudely done things. And, you know, then everything just exploded from there.
That's so funny to think about the crudely drawn Bart Simpsons, because, you know, I was a teacher for 20 years. So I sort of learned to draw him. And if you were ever subbing or, you know, with a difficult group of kids, you'd always just pull out, let me show you how to draw Bart. And every eye was just locked on you.
Excellent. All right, Heather, you're up next. What's your next pick?
My next pick is, oh, this one is so dear to me, and I know I bring it up anytime anybody brings up Christmas movies, but that's because I love it so much. It's one of my favorite childhood movies, period, end of discussion. And it's 1989, Prancer. With Sam Elliott. I know, and not a lot of people love it, and not a lot of people revisit it. I don't know if it plays on TV very often or anything like that. But I connected immediately to the character of Jessica Rigg. She was kind of a weirdo. Like her, if you've seen the movie and the part where everyone's singing in the Christmas choir and she's singing loudly and happily off key because she loved Christmas so much, that is 100% me as a child and an adult. I mean, that was exactly it. And it had this sad story about how she lost her mom and her dad was struggling financially and struggling to, you know, be a parent and give her what she needed as a daughter too. And then the older brother too, or the younger brother, I'm not sure. But I have a brother too, and the relationship that they had, I just connected to it, but it was sweet and it had funny parts, and it's just a great story. And I still tear up every year when Sam Elliott reads her favorite Christmas story to her at the end. It's wonderful. My brother always says, it's too sad to watch. Why do you watch this? It's going to make you cry. I'm like, I know. It's okay. But I watch it every year. It's dear to me.
Aw.
I don't think that I have ever seen it. I'm familiar with it, but I don't think I've ever seen it. I was just looking up the Wikipedia page. Apparently, there is a direct-to-video sequel that came out in 2001, Prancer Returns.
That makes me sad.
Oh, I'm sorry. The movie made you sad, and now I just made you sadder.
it's uplifting. There's sad moments, but what it is hope and love, I think. It's good.
It's so quick. Can I just say real quick, Heather? Now that my wife really likes Prancer too, so I'm gonna say that too. And it is cute. But am I remembering? No, you're fine, honey. She's too loud. She's watching Christmas movies in the other room. Anyways, no. But Prancer is one of those movies that it's just I never even heard of it. And then she said, "Hey, this is such a great." But remember his face? Was it a little freaky? Or you just totally so into it emotionally you can't see that?
No, they used a real deer. There wasn't any.
Oh. Isn't he like kind of fell or something? And he's seeing his mouth talk.
He can't talk. He doesn't talk. Oh. There's no talking. There's no talking at all. Yeah, you are. And I'm trying to place it right now. And I know what face you're talking about. And it's not the same.
For me. As long as you have an inclination that I maybe.
Yeah. No, no. There's no talking, but you're right about the fact that he was injured. He hurt his leg.
All right. We'll figure it out. Email me when you find out. But Prancer, no, I have seen Prancer, and it is cute, really cute movie. And of course, my wife loves it, so I have to say that kind of loud. Anyway.
Excellent. All right, Vern, what's your next pick?
All right, well, I've just set the stage for you for this next movie here. So when I was younger, you know, probably around the age of like 8 or 9, I remember just being really super excited for Christmas, and me and my sister would stay up together, and we'd make noise, and my dad would come down and be like, kids, you gotta go to bed, all right? It's late. Go to bed. Santa will not come if you don't go to bed. But we're just all super excited because it's Christmas. So the next year, my dad comes to me and says, all right, family, because I know that you and your sister are having a hard time trying to sleep at night. So what we're going to do is we're going to watch a movie. And this movie is important. Now pay attention to it, though, because if you kids do not go to sleep, this is what's going to happen to you. So
oh, no.
They put on Salo or 120 Days of Sodom.
All right. I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a second.
Christmas Eve.
You changed. You were having sure. me believe you, and then that just happened. Come on.
You
now.
Know, that explains a lot, actually. These are starting to make sense. Guys.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't keep a straight face right there. No, we watched How the Grinch Stole Christmas, all right? Every Christmas Eve, we watched How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the original animated movie.
Okay, yes, thank you for clarifying.
Boris Perloff.
Thank you for clarifying.
Although that was true. No. I would get a lot of letters here. No, sorry. But we watched How the Grinch Stole Christmas every year. Boris Perloff narration, the song. I love the Chuck Jones animation. How the Grinch Stole Christmas still holds up for me. I love watching that. I still love watching it to this day. I love it way more than the Jim Carrey version, like 20 times more. But it's weird because each Christmas now, that Jim Carrey version is the version that my niece and nephews love even more. So they are more in tune to that. We showed them the original one and they liked it, but not as much as the Jim Carrey one, so that one has become more of a tradition around the household there, yes. Although I think one of these years we'll have to show him Solo or 120 Days of Sodom.
All right.
No, go to bed.
Yeah, the original animated Grinch is brilliant. You know, on the Jim Carrey one real quick, it's just so bloated. It's like they What the thing that bugs me the most about that version is that I want Ron Howard, the director, to say, all right, Jim, I'm the director here. You need to dial it back a bit, you know, and it just doesn't happen. But anyway, the animated one is wonderful. I'm a huge fan of animation and, you know, throughout the whole, you know, history of the art form, you know, going back to the early short subjects and the way they developed over time. And, you know, especially when it comes to Chuck Jones, you know, Chuck Jones has a long history going back to the early Warner Brothers stuff. And you see a change in his style of things, you know, as he goes from, you know, the 40s to the 50s, et cetera. And then here we are in the 60s and he does How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And I think this is the best example of Chuck Jones's directing and animation style in the 60s. He did a lot of stuff during this era. You know, he had like, you know, he did the Tom and Jerry shorts during this time. He did the Phantom Tollbooth movie, but the How the Grinch Stole Christmas, I think just perfectly illustrates what Chuck Jones's style was like during the 60s. The shot where the Grinch just has that huge grin that just, you know, covers half of his face is I think such an iconic animation moment. So yeah, this is a wonderful pick.
He was able to even, like, you know, take a story and update it with like songs and visual cues that were not in the actual book. It's homage to the book, but it's also its own thing, which I really love most about it.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, Matt, don't forget that Boris Karloff voice.
Oh yeah,
unreal.
Can't even duplicate it though.
He's the singer of the song too. You're
I can't see. I'm not even going to do a credit right there. I just sound horrible even trying to do a copy of it.
Such a great song though. You can get all that too on Apple Music, or it's all the songs are out there.
Or you can hire me to sing bad Christmas songs for you. Me and Heather will actually. Yeah, Heather like and I said, are going to start a whole Christmas band. Come join us.
I'm there.
All right, before we have any more unnecessary singing, let's have Getter give us her pick.
All right, I'm thinking if I should do like two in one, because I don't think I can separate them. I think it was obvious. I said I was like basically a 90s kid, so definitely, my holiday Christmas staples were Home Alone and Home Alone 2. I mean, there's nothing else to say. These movies have been talked about a lot. I don't think I can add anything new.
Except for Home Alone 3, 4, and 5.
I actually like Home Alone 3. I didn't put it here because I don't have the energy to defend it.
Sure, I like it too. It's fine. It's fine movie. I don't mind it.
Yeah, it's not as bad as some sequels now. I mean, there's like 100 Fast and Furious movies. But Home Alone and Home Alone 2 are definitely the movies that I remember from Christmas the most. I think when Pied a Dime both were out, I think we watched them in a row. So basically you start with one and then you watch the second one and then that's the evening. And yeah, I haven't, I just realized I haven't seen it in years. I remember it very clearly. I could remember the scenes and the joy and just the humor and everything. But I watched also recently one really good show, if you haven't seen it yet, Schitt's Creek. So just to see Catherine O'Hara again, even like to see her shine, it just brings back Home Alone memories for me because Catherine O'Hara was the mom of my childhood and TV, I think. But yeah, I don't know. I think for many 90s kids, it's like the Christmas movie of their childhood. So I'm just going to mention them both at the same time and get like, I don't know, 3 and 2 out of the way right away.
It blew my mind a few weeks ago when, we hit the anniversary date of the release of the first Home Alone and it was the 30th anniversary. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that movie is 30 years old. But the thing is, it holds up. I mean, my two kids, my kids are 21 and 18. And the other night they just, decided themselves, hey, we're going to watch both Home Alone movies back to back here. You know, it's one of those kind of moments that makes you go, I raised them right. I think, the first movie is wonderful. The second movie, you kind of have to just take it for what it is because, it's a weird, contrived rehash of the first, but it's still fun. And again, this is another John Hughes connection. And, again, being someone who was becoming a big movie fan in the 80s and especially living in the Chicago area, which is where John Hughes set all his movies, Home Alone being a part of that John Hughes canon, that made it required viewing for us when I was a teenager. So, yeah.
And Home Alone 2 has Tim Allen. No, wait, Tim Curry. Damn it.
Yes, it does. Can't keep them straight today.
I don't know why.
And of course, I thought Vern was going to say, and you know who's in Home Alone 2.
Yeah, we know, but we're not going to talk about it.
I'm not going to mention that. Yeah. All right,
Damian, what's your next pick?
Okay, this one will be quick. Like it was so poetically said earlier, what more could you say about Home Alone? What more can I say about A Christmas Carol of 1984?
Oh, this is the George C. Scott one?
Yes, sir, it is. And I watched it recently. I was like, oh, man, I got so much out of it. So it's definitely gone from my childhood. Like, I think it was on TV or something.
Yeah, it was a made-for-TV.
Okay, so it must have been on TV all the time. That's probably when we saw it. But just loved it. And then to be reunited with it later in life as a grown-up, wow, it still had that impact on me. So that's, like I said, there's not much to say about it. Anybody remember this one?
I do, yeah.
Not this one. I've seen other and Muppets, but I have not seen this one. I've seen the Jim Carrey Christmas Carol, but I've not seen any of the older ones. And I feel bad. I heard this one's supposed to be really good, but I have not yet seen it.
I don't know if I mentioned it. I'll listen later, but George C. Scott, did I say that?
Yeah, yeah.
I just want everybody to know. He delivers a performance. Obviously, you don't forget, because I haven't forgot it. It's amazing. It's
George C. Scott. That's what he does.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, he commands the screen. And in this, he becomes so meek and feeble. I don't think I could give spoilers to A Christmas Carol. But, yeah, he becomes very meek and feeble. And to go from such a commanding a-hole, that Scrooge is, to that is amazing to see. And then just dance in the streets, of course, afterwards. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, that's a big thing about playing Scrooge. I gotta believe that you're like this curmudgeoned a-hole from the very start. I gotta be like almost like afraid of you in order for me to like buy your character arc.
Like staple the freaking deer antlers onto the mouse's head.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead. That'll work. Just staple them.
I love that Bill Murray reference there, Heather.
Thank you.
Yeah, this version, I think, is one of the better ones. There were several TV adaptations of A Christmas Carol back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I remember this one. This is one of the strongest ones. Another one I remember, and, it's been forever since I saw it, but there was a version where Henry Winkler, who was playing the Fonz on Happy Days at the time, played Ebenezer Scrooge. And I have memories of that as well.
Oh, my goodness. So, I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah. Well, you did a very good job there of giving me a good segue, Damien, because I'm also going to next cover a version of a Christmas Carol.
That's neat.
You know, I'm not doing the Muppet Christmas Carol at all, because we've talked about that lots, and that's not my childhood. I'm a huge Muppet fan, and I've got plenty more Muppets that I'm going to talk about later here. Okay. But the Muppet Christmas Carol, I was in college when that came out, so I can't consider that a childhood memory of mine. But there is a version of A Christmas Carol. This was a feature film released in 1970, and it's called Scrooge. And this is the one that stars Albert Finney. Okay.
Yeah.
And I remember one Christmas when I was a kid, they showed this on Channel 32 in Chicago, which was the channel we watched all day long, because, they would show like Tom and Jerry cartoons and the Brady Bunch and the Monkees and things like that. It was the reruns channel. All right. But on this particular Christmas Eve, they put aside Tom and Jerry, and they, made a big deal about they were going to show Scrooge. And I was like, ooh, I want to watch that. And this is just a wild, big budget musical extravaganza version of A Christmas Carol. I think it was made kind of in response to the feature film version of Oliver, which is, of course, based on other Charles Dickens work that had been, just a few years before this. And so they were trying to kind of cash in on this, and they made this great big musical thing based on A Christmas Carol. And the things that I remember about this, Albert Finney really does a great job as Scrooge here. He is one of the most crotchety and I would say grotesque versions of Scrooge that I've ever seen. It just looks inhuman almost at points in this. And, you've also got Alec Guinness playing, Marley, and, he's downright scary, downright scary at points in this. And I think that's the other thing that stood out to me about this is there are some scary sequences in this. I mean, A Christmas Carol is a ghost story. And, some of those moments are really dark in this, especially when we get to the cemetery sequence at the end with the ghost of Christmas yet to come. There's actually a moment in this where we see the ghost. His hood comes off, and it's a skeleton, and he shoves Scrooge into the grave, and he falls down this huge shaft, and then we actually have a sequence of Scrooge in hell, which is just like will wreck you as a kid. And then, the songs in this, the songs are really good, but they're weird. There's this song that Scrooge sings that's called I Hate People, which is like, all right. But the one that I remember the most, and now I'm going to be the one singing here on the show, but it's like, there's this number that's called Thank You Very Much. And it's this big rousing thing where they've all got the strong British accents, thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for me. But the thing is, when they sing that song, it's during the sequence where all of the people in the town have discovered that Scrooge is dead, and they're dancing and singing and celebrating that he's dead, And then they redeem the song and bring it back at the end and make it nice. But, that song is just an earworm. I've been hearing it in my head for the last week. But it's.
So you have me at Alec Guinness, and then you lost me at that point.
But it's a fun movie. I mean, if you like kind of the big musical Broadway style of things, my daughter, she loves musicals, and she watches this movie every year. She loves it. So yeah, this is one I don't hear talked about much in terms of the versions of A Christmas Carol, but Scrooge from 1970 is worth a look. All right, Heather, you're up next.
Okay, I'm gonna piggyback one that's already been mentioned, but this one is kind of where I had lost the magic of Santa, and I had discovered at this point that Santa was not.
What?
Santa what? Was on vacation for the 30 years of my life. So, Santa was out of town and wasn't going to be visiting. So my parents had to help him out, apparently. That's what happened. Okay. So I was 9 when this movie came out, and a lot of the magic of Christmas had shifted for me, and everyone went bananas for this movie, as we all know is Home Alone. And it kind of recaptured and solidified all of that Christmas fun and joy. I mean, we all can say Catherine O'Hara is definitely the worst mother of all time. I mean,
but she looks good doing it.
She does, and I love her. She is so wonderful, and she pulls it off. And John Candy is he's John Candy.
Yeah.
So it's a great movie. It's entertaining. It's fun. Everybody's just wonderful in it, and it's still one of my favorite ones to watch every season. Every season.
I think you could watch Uncle Buck, Planes, Trains, Automobile, and Home Alone as kind of like a candy Christmas triple feature.
I agree.
That'd be great.
Keep the change, you filthy.
Leave it on the doorstep. Get the hell out of here.
I wish that was a real movie. I think that would be.
I thought it was for the longest time.
I did too.
I
tried to find it at video stores, and I thought maybe it was an old movie that never got. I thought because of distribution rights that it wasn't going to be released on video.
I thought it was real, and then I saw that guy that plays the gangster show up in some other movie. You know, like, he's a Chicago area actor, and he was probably in something like The Fugitive or something like that was filmed in Chicago and used all Chicago actors. And I went, oh, it's that guy. Wait, he's the same age that he is in that movie. Darn, that's not a real movie.
I think the house that they used, or at least they used as the outside, was for sale last year too.
Yeah, I think saw that.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right, Vern, what's your next one?
All right. Well, so earlier I talked about that, our family played different movie trilogies. And one of the trilogies we did play was Lethal Weapon. Mm-hmm. But we did kind of change it up one year too to put in other action movies that took place during Christmas time. So, of course, there's Die Hard, Lethal Weapon. And then I remember this mainly because Getter was talking about, her nostalgia from the 90s. And in the 90s, I was still living at home because I was in high school. But I do remember watching, a few Christmas action movies. And I had no idea that a lot of these were written by the same guy. So, essentially, I was having a Shane Black Christmas. Every Christmas, because we watched, Lethal Weapon, and then we watched Long Distant Night, and then I believe we watched Last Boy Scout. Recently, even after I left high school, we still watched some Shaped by Christmas. We did watch Kiss Kiss Bane Bane.
Yep, I added that one to my Christmas list this year.
And 2000 right there. So yeah, I've been watching a lot of Christmas-themed action movies, and I noticed that a lot of them were written by Shane Black.
Iron Man 3, also Christmas.
Iron Man 3. Yeah, we didn't watch. It's true that that came up later on there, but we didn't get a chance to watch Iron Man 3. Yes, but now we can because it's on Disney Plus.
Excellent. Yes, a Shane Black Christmas. That sounds like a good way to spend the day. I'm down for that.
Yeah, that's. Yeah.
We've plus, actually done that before too. We've done Lethal Weapon. Actually, the year before last, we did. Actually, we did all four Lethal Weapons, and we did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang at the end of that.
Oh, nice. Long Kiss Goodnight is a really great Christmas movie. It's just Amnesia, Samuel Jackson, Gina Davis looking super hot.
All right, very good. Getter, what's your next pick?
All right, so I just thought of this. I'm adding this. I know I consider childhood, this is more like teenage years, but let's go with it. Because now I can relate to it more as a grown-up. So I'm going with Bridget Jones, the first movie.
Yeah.
Because there's a scene in this movie that where she sings. I won't sing. I know it's a thing now in this episode, apparently.
Oh,
I won't.
Get her.
I won't because I can't hold a tune, but when she sings All By Myself and eats ice cream, I feel that. That's me.
All by myself.
All right, be careful, guys. We don't want to have to pay a royalty.
It's also like a Christmas movie, but it starts off with like, it's not like the joyous Christmas movie right from the bat. You know, it starts off like Christmas for some people isn't the happiest time of the year, as seen from Bridget Jones. Plus, it has ugly sweaters, and it's fun. And I do plan to rewatch it this year. I think I will. It was already on TV, I remember, but I didn't have time because I was doing the 24 bad Christmas movies that are ruining my life. But I will watch it right after I finish the torture.
I haven't watched that movie since it came out. I know I saw that one, and I saw the second one. I have not seen the third one. Of the Bridget Jones
the
series.
The first one, okay, I cannot stand Renee Zellweger for the life of me. And I think she is absolutely adorable and lovable in that movie. It's wonderful.
He's talking about one?
The third one is nostalgic. I don't like these, the way they're bringing back the characters after so many years. I'm not a fan of that, but it's just good to revisit. I think she is just a really good character. And she's very fun, and she messes up, which is, like, nice to see.
She's relatable.
Yeah. And it's just that lady from Harry Potter who plays the bathroom ghost, she's her friend. I love her voice. It's so annoying. I love it. every time I hear it, I have, like, I bring back memories from, like, different things. But, yeah, it's just a good movie.
Very good. All right, Damien, what's your next one?
John Denver and the Muppets. Am I allowed to?
You are, but I will jump into the discussion on that as well, because that's actually one of my picks.
Well,
also.
I don't have much to say, and I'd love to hear what you have to say, because I know it's your area of expertise in a way. But let me just say, in this beloved holiday classic, Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy, and all the Muppets join the singer for a heartwarming Christmas celebration with traditional carols as well as lesser-known holiday songs. And this LP was played in my home as we cleaned, as we spent lovely moments together in the right.
Thank you, Damien.
That's one of the things about this special is that album has continued to be like a big seller at Christmas time. I think, you know, basically for the last 40 years, it's endured. But the special only aired, I think, a few years. It premiered in, I believe it was 1979, which is the same year of the Muppet movie. And, you know, it's kind of at the height of the popularity of the Muppet show. So, you know, Jim Henson and his gang were, you know, at the top of their game during this time. And, you know, it's basically like a musical variety special, which were, you know, there were tons of those in the 70s. I mean, we had whole, you know, regular weekly series that were that type of thing. You know, the Sonny and Cher show, and Donnie and Marie and stuff like that. And, you know, basically this is taking that format, but it's John Denver and the Muppets, and it's Christmas themed. And it's got so many wonderful moments to it. The part I always remember the most is the opening where they do the 12 Days of Christmas. And, you know, it's each of the Muppets jumping in on a different day, you know, and so they each kind of have their own one that they sing, and they add little touch, like Fozzie, you know, keeps missing his cue and doesn't remember to say Seven Swans of Swimming at the right time. And Miss Piggy adds a little flourish to her, you know, she goes, five gold rings, ba-dum, bump, bump, you know, and
you know, your kids repeated that back to you.
They did.
Times. I know mine have.
and I always remember too, it bugged me a little bit the way that John Denver says the word partridge. He doesn't say a partridge in a pear tree. He says a partridge in a pear tree. He can't say the letter R, apparently. I don't know. But the other thing that's unique about it too, I was kind of looking at it the other day, because you can find it on YouTube, and much like Charlie Brown, which I don't know, that might come up here later on, but it does something that they would never do today on any of these specials, where at the end they actually do the biblical Christmas story, and they portray it with puppets, which, you know, probably initially you think, oh, that'd be weird. What do you have, like Gonzo as the three wise men? You know, but it's not that. They actually do a much different style of puppet that are much, you know, more kind of reverent and serious looking. And it does a great job of it. And again, as somebody with a puppetry background, I find that intriguing, because the Christmas story done with puppets is something that is a long-standing tradition. In fact, the you know, the puppets we know as marionettes, the, you know, string puppets, the reason they have that name marionette is it means little Mary, because they use them to do the Christmas story in the church. You know, it's kind of continuing that tradition a little bit. But, you know, beyond all that, this is, you know, one of the best Christmas specials of the 70s. It's one that I remember watching when it aired, and, you know, like Damien, listen to that album over and over again. It's not just a Muppet fan thing. It's a legit great Christmas special.
Yeah. And he has a few songs on there, I think, that he premiered on there. I remember Merry Christmas, Little Zachary. Mm-hmm. Remember that one?
Yeah.
I think that was one that he just put on there that was his own. I could be wrong about that, but
no, I think you're right.
I always thought it was him, and I couldn't find it on any other album, so it's almost like he gave him that one.
Yeah.
When I hear you guys talking about the special, I'm starting to remember it now. That 12 Days of Christmas stands out the most for me. I really thought that was a separate Muppet thing. I thought that was on the actual Muppet show. I forgot it came from this special, and now I want to rewatch this now. Very good.
Excellent. Well, that took care of my next entry. I was actually going to save that one for last, but I'm jumping on there with Damien. It's no problem. No problem. I've got more Muppets to talk about up for my last one, but we'll go back to Heather for her last pick here, guys. Make it good. These are your last ones.
Okay. I had to go with one of the childhood holiday cartoons. And I mean, there's the Grinch, which was already mentioned, and, Charlie Brown Christmas also, which is a staple in our house, but I was always partial to Frosty the Snowman. Mm-hmm. It's literally, I think, like 23 minutes long, but it's so much fun, and it's so silly. And I know that, you know, I started the show by saying happy birthday, but you know, literally anytime I have to sing happy birthday to someone or there's anything like that, that is exactly the voice I use, and it stuck with me forever. And busy, busy, busy. there's just so many great, like, comical moments. The cartoon itself is bright and fun. And, you know, you do have the somber moment where, I mean, they melt Frosty. It's a little dark. But he comes back to life because Vern shows up with his friend Santa and uses Christmas magic and Christmas snow. But I think it's another one. It's just a really, really good time that kind of captures the whole spirit of the holiday, and it's family friendly too. It's great for little kids and adults.
Heather, you said I show up with Christmas magic and Christmas snow?
I sure did.
I do? It's Frosty?
Yeah, you do with Santa.
Holy shit. I don't remember this at all.
I know.
And this is also a Rankin Bass.
Yes, but it's... but it's a different style than the others, because, you know, when we think Rankin Bass, we mainly think of the stop motion ones like Rudolph was. This was a hand drawn animation. And Heather, you're right. The animation is beautiful in this. It's crisp and colorful. And, you know, this is, I think, one of the best of the animated Christmas specials from back there in the late 60s, early 70s. And I love that Jimmy Durante is the voice of the narrator and sings the song. You know, folks that are more into classic film will know Jimmy Durante. He's a guy with his big shtick was that he had a big nose and all that, ha-cha-cha-cha, that whole thing. But he's fantastic. This is one of those specials that has just endured. You know, it's not, you look at some of those others, like you look at Rudolph, and yeah, it's still magical, but it is dated. I don't think Frosty is quite as dated. This is one that endures.
It does. It's great. It really is. And it's not Christmas if we don't watch Frosty.
I like watching old hand-drawn animated tales. Frosty, Jimmy Durante, because the last thing I remember Jimmy Durante in was in the movie My Stepmother's an Alien.
What?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember that.
That's my only reference to Jimmy Durante, because Dan Aykroyd sings a song with Kim Basinger for his daughter.
Oh, okay. All right. I remember. All right.
Well, and that's the only reference I have to Jimmy Durante was in My Stepmother's an Alien. Yes.
All right. Well, Vern, it's time for your last pick.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, let's go back to the year 1984, and my pick is going to be Gremlins.
Yay! Yeah.
Now, before I actually saw the movie, Burger King had this deal going on where you could, like, each week they would have, like, a different toy, and the toy came with a record. Like, but not like, yeah, it came with a vinyl record that told a different part of the Gremlins story. It was a narrated story with, like, audio effects and music. And I fully remembered listening to Gremlins before I was able to see the movie. So I kind of knew the plotline of it. And that scared me, but still excited me. And so when I finally got a chance to watch it, I didn't get a chance to watch it in theaters. Parents thought that was a little bit too scary, although I got to see Ghostbusters at the time. But for some reason, Gremlins was a little bit too much, which I understand now looking back at it. But I just remember having both, like, the joy of, like, Christmas and also being very scared. That song, Do You Hear What I Hear?
Oh, that's
Contest of Gremlins.
Yeah.
Just made it sound – so every time I hear that song, I picture the mom – of Gremlins walking around the house
with a knife.
With a knife. And
that's the thing with Gremlins. You know, I mean, it is a horror movie in some respects. It is a comedy in many respects as well. But the scenes that are the most horror about it are also the scenes that are the most Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
it's wonderful. It really is. And that's another one that I feel like has endured as well. It's still just as good. It's so amazing.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you talked about not seeing it in the theater, and it was a big deal because there was a lot of marketing. You know, there were plush gizmo dolls and stuff, and then parents were like, this is not for kids. And, you know, it's one of the movies that caused the creation of the PG-13 back there in 84.
Yeah.
But part of it, too, it's not just the, you know, the fact that a gremlin blows up in the microwave or things like that that got the parents upset. But, you know, Phoebe Cates' scene about where she talks about what happened to her father and not believing in Santa Claus anymore is the scene that I think upset parents more.
The weird thing is, like, when I watched that at the time, that just didn't really faze me at all. I wasn't concerned about the fact that, like, Santa wasn't real or not. I was more concerned about the fact that her dad died in the chimney.
I didn't quite grasp it when I was a kid. And you know, Vern, too, this movie was the movie that tormented me most as a child with nightmares. I was convinced there were gremlins under my bed in my closet. And my parents sat me down and made me watch Aliens because they thought it would scare me and I'd want to stop watching scary movies.
Oh,
it did not scare me at all. I loved it. This movie, still at night, I jump away from the bed in case there's something underneath it. A combination of poltergeist in this movie, because there could be gremlins in your house. That last bit was what always stuck with me. It's fantastic.
But couldn't you, like, calm things down by watching Gremlins 2, The New Batch? Because
that's so fun, too.
Gremlins 2 is a masterpiece. It's wonderful.
I love Gremlins 2 very much. Yeah.
Right.
I can't decide which one's better. All right. I like them both very much.
They're both very different, and they're both very awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Getter, what is your final pick?
So I'm pretty sure nobody has seen this one. If you have, wow. Because this one is an 80s animation. It's like a three-part animation made by the Soviet Union and Japan. So it is called, for some reason, on IMDb, Scamper the Penguin, but I know the title, kind of like a rough translation, The Adventures of Lolo the Penguin. So I'm going to go with The Adventures of Lolo and the Penguin.
I love
instead
it.
Of, instead of the other one. So it came out, all three parts came out in 86 and 87. It's basically about a little penguin growing up, and that's it. I remember that this was kind of like my childhood cartoon. I'm not exactly sure if it's Christmas, but I know that the storyline begins in December, so I count it as Christmas. It has snow. It has penguins. I love it. I saw it as it was narrated by Estonians. There's an English version up on YouTube if in case you want to watch it. It's just fun. I think for like modern animations, Happy Feet is kind of like similar vibes, or I don't know. But this one is just basically, there's like even like these bad guys who are like hunting seals and stuff. I remember vaguely about this, but yeah, that's basically my childhood. If I think back to what I watched as a kid, it was a Russian cartoon about a little penguin called Lolo. And it was amazing.
Very
I haven't
nice.
Seen it in years.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. And I don't think any of us have seen this. I Googled it here, and I see the VHS artwork here. And I go, okay, that looks familiar. I think I can remember seeing that, you know, sitting on the shelf at Blockbuster or something, but never took a look at it, obviously. But, yeah, I was kind of hopeful. I thought, well, wow, considering that Getter's in such a different part of the world than the rest of us, I wonder if we'll get something unique here. And we did. So great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I could not find it. There is a Russian cartoon that is basically Frozen, but in Russian and made in like the 80s or something. There's a 50s version, but I don't think that's the right one. But I remember a cartoon that is similar to Frozen. But since I couldn't find it, I couldn't add it, but that's also excellent. Something that I saw as a kid.
Well, penguins are my favorite animal. That's the one that when I'm at the zoo, my kids all know, all right, Dad needs to see the penguins before we leave. So maybe I'll have to look at this one. All right, Damien, what is your final pick?
I would have to say that, and I don't know if you're going to do this one too, but It's a Wonderful Life.
No, go for it.
Oh, okay. An angel, as many of you know, is sent from heaven to help a desperately frustrated businessman by showing him what life would have been like if he'd never existed. If you haven't seen this out there, this is my number one.
Me. That's me. I have not seen this.
Oh, he even believed that. Oh, my God.
And I remember you said that earlier.
But I'm going to watch it this week for sure. I promise.
Okay. Hey, man, this is, you know. It's like three generations that I know of in my family. When VHS came out, it would have to be. And then before that, black and white TV. No, I'm not that old. But anyway, this is just has been a backbone of my movie appreciation, apart from Christmas, too. You know, any fond feelings for this film out there?
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful movie. I guess I tied that in well there. Yeah, it's I remember seeing it for the first time. I actually had a teacher in, I think I was in like seventh grade, showed this to us. And, you know, probably at the time was one of the first kind of classic era films that I'd seen outside of like The Wizard of Oz and things like that, and was just like, wow, that's really something. And yeah, I mean, back in the 80s, the VHS era, this was a movie that, you know, was everywhere because it had somehow fallen into the public domain. And so every company that was trying to make a buck selling VHS tapes put out copies of It's a Wonderful Life and Night of the Living Dead because they could get those for free. And it aired on TV every year. I mean, you literally had it again because it was public domain, where you would have two stations in the same market showing It's a Wonderful Life at the same time because they didn't have to pay anything to show it. But yeah, it's a great movie. So,
well, I do remember seeing It's a Wonderful Life during Gremlins, so I did see part of it.
Well, I guess that counts for something.
I was actually thinking it's been, I think it's probably been a good 10, 15 years since I've watched it. It definitely needs to be revisited. It's a wonderful movie.
What if there was no Heather? What if there was
oh,
the world would don't be scare me.
Darker.
It would be so much quieter.
Well,
scary.
Anyway, it's a wonderful movie. You should watch it. If it's been 15 years, definitely it's time.
Yeah. All right. Well, my final pick here, again, as I said earlier, my last two picks are both Muppet things. So, you know, I was going to save John Denver for last, but I'm switching around here. And, you know, this is also a wonderful special. This one was in 1987, and it's called A Muppet Family Christmas. And in this one, the basic premise is that Kermit and the gang are all headed off to Fozzie's mom's house for Christmas, because she lives out in the country and that. And, you know, Fozzie's like, let's surprise her. They don't know that Fozzie's mom is planning on going off to Malibu for the holiday and that she's rented the house out to somebody else. Now, the person that she's rented it out to is Doc, the human character from Fraggle Rock, and his dog Sprocket. And so they end up having to share the house with them. And gradually, as the special continues, the various Muppets all show up. And by the time the special is done, the house is just filled with Muppets. So you have, like, there's a subplot where Miss Piggy is, you know, trying to get there, but she's caught in a snowstorm. So Kermit's all worried and stuff. You have the Sesame Street Muppets show up at one point as Christmas carolers, and then they all come into the house. And so you've got Bert and Ernie and Big Bird and Oscar and all those guys in there. At one point, Kermit wanders into the basement and finds a hole, which takes him to Fraggle Rock. So you get the Fraggle Rock characters coming in there. So basically all the different Muppet characters up to this point in the 80s show up in this special. And, you know, like I said, by the end, you've got them all singing and stuff. You've even got a segment in here where they watch home movies. And so they see the Muppet Babies there. So they even work that property into things. you know, it's, you can find it out there. I think it's on YouTube. There are DVDs out of it. But I think a lot of times the DVDs are edited, because I think there are some rights issues when it comes to, like, the Muppet Babies and things like that. So, you know, there's often edited versions out there. But again, it's a really sweet special. It's got some of that great Muppet comedy. There's a wonderfully weird and dark moment in this, you know, that it just kind of shows the subversive humor of the Muppets, where the Swedish chef is trying to prepare the Christmas turkey and he spots Big Bird walk in and is like, now there's a turkey, and he wants to cook Big Bird, you know. So, and the thing I love about this most is that there's a moment at the end where, you know, they're all singing there, and Jim Henson himself peers out of the kitchen door, and he's looking out there with the dog Sprocket, and he says something along the lines of, "They sure look like they're having fun. I love seeing them have fun together." And then he goes, "Come on, Sprocket, let's do the dishes for them." And, you know, and they go to work. And it just kind of, it's a little bittersweet because, again, this is 87. And I think it's just, only about 2 years later or so that Jim Henson would pass away. So it's kind of one of the last moments there in one of his specials and such. And it's again, just another really sweet Muppet Christmas things. The Muppets did Christmas very well, as we all know, and this is just another great special that they did.
I love that.
Yeah, I as you're describing it too, I think I watched this one. I remember it. I remember bits and pieces of that, and I remember the Fraggles being there too, because I love Fraggle Rock. I still love Fraggle.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a blade at this one. The 80s was a very rough time for the Vern. And so I don't quite remember this one as I should.
Was it the heroin?
Yeah, it was that the
Christmas snow. Yeah,
everything. I vaguely remember Fraggle Rock's being in a Christmas special, but don't quite remember this tale. But you described it beautifully, Todd, and I will definitely want to check this out.
All right. Well, you guys all had some fantastic picks there. Hopefully some of our listeners will check those out. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we will be back with a game here on the Lambcast.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm John.
And we are the hosts of the Popcorn Auteur, a movies podcast, where each episode we immerse ourselves in and critique the works of a famous filmmaker.
The concept is pretty straightforward. Chris and I pick a famous filmmaker, watch their films over a short time frame, then we talk about the films, mispronounce French words, and answer definitively, is this filmmaker an auteur, and do we like them?
Subscribe and download episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Google Play.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We are going to skip over rants and raves since we had a nice long discussion there, but we are going to do a game, and the Vern has prepared something for us here. So, Vern, what's our game?
All right, I do have a game here, but Todd, I want to bring in my friend to help host this game show, if you don't mind.
There you go.
Please
for
tell
it.
Me it's the cat. Please tell me it's the cat.
Oh, sorry. No. The cat's sitting right now. Dog. All right,
it's fine.
I'm going to bring my friend. Come here, Jean-Paul. Just come in here. It's going to be okay. Hello, everybody. Hello, Heather. Do you hear me okay?
I do. It's good to hear from you again, JP.
Hello, Heather. You smell so wonderful and pretty. Your farts smell great.
I saved them just for you.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello, Damien.
Yes, Damien is here.
Hello. Hello, Ketta. Hello, Ty. Yes. Hello. Merry Christmas to all of you out there. I do have a game here for you, and I'm sorry to say my game has nothing to do with the Christmas season, and it should have, but it does not. So my game show is all about remakes, all about those stupid American remakes that are made of movies, because you Americans do not know how to read very well, from what I've heard. So what I'm going to do for this game show is I'm going to name you the name of a original French, Spanish, Japanese movie. And then I want you to tell me the name of the American remake. All you got to do is just buzz in with your name. There are 10 movies, so up to like 1,000 points, all right?
Okay. Now, are you going to be speaking in Japanese, or are these like English translations of...
These are, yes, no, I will tell you the English translations, okay. All right, those movies,
all right? Very
for
good.
So the first one here, hold on, let me cut my notes here. For 100 points, the first one is Seven Samurai.
Heather. Heather. Yes. What is the... Oh, I'm sorry, I was playing Jeopardy last night. What is the Magnificent Seven?
Yes, for 100 points. Heather, let me write that down here. One Heather, Heather, Heather. Okay. So for 200, Infernal Affairs.
Todd.
Heather.
Todd. Now we're Todd first there. Todd.
The Departed.
Very good, Todd. You know your movies well. All right. For 300 points, La Femme Nikita.
Todd.
Todd.
I think it was called Point of No Return.
That is right there.
Good call.
Bridget Fonda was in it.
Yeah, that was a good, fun movie, actually.
All right. For 400 points, La Cage aux Folies.
Todd.
Todd.
The Birdcage.
Oh, I didn't say that.
All right. Very good. There's still a chance for people to get on the board there. Number 5, La Châtie.
Oh, I know this. Todd.
Todd, going in there.
I think that's 12 Monkeys.
That is correct there. Oh, very good.
Thanks for giving everyone else a chance, Todd.
Yeah.
What out here? I'm trying to fix the points here now.
I'm just letting other one you win. I just won the last game I was in like a few months ago.
Very nice of you.
Hey, well, give me a second here, folks. There, I apologize. Gosh, all right. Next one up here is Open Your Eyes.
Open Your Eyes.
Wow.
And the rest of it is La Obras Los Ojos, which I'm going to mess up now, because I have a very horrible Spanish accent.
Oh, I think I know this.
Eyes of my mother.
Heather. Is it Vanilla Sky?
Yes, you are correct.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Woo! That was luck. I started with Tom Cruise. I thought Eyes Wide Shut, and then it jumped to that. It wasn't even, like, smart on my part at all.
All right, next one up is Rick.
Oh. What?
So what's the name of the American remake?
Do we get negative points if we get the wrong answer?
No, there are no negative points here.
Let's take your guess.
Heather.
Go ahead, Heather.
VHS.
That is incorrect.
Yeah, okay.
Anybody else know?
I have no idea.
It is actually Quarantine.
Mm. Okay, that makes more sense.
All right. The next one here. The tall blonde man with one black shoe.
Todd.
Todd.
The man with one red shoe.
Ah, very good, Todd.
Very good.
Okay. Next one up here is La Totale.
La Totale.
La Totale.
No idea.
Nope.
Anybody? Nope. All right. The American remake of La Totale is True Lies.
Oh. I didn't know that was a remake.
Yes.
Well, the original
came out in the late 80s, I believe. Yes. And the final one in my French to Americans, because all Americans are just so stupid. The original movie title was Fanfare of Love.
What is
the American remake?
I'm just not knowing any of these foreign titles.
Heather.
Heather.
Fatal Attraction.
Oh, that would have been a good one, but that is incorrect. So right. Stupid American of you.
Les incompétents. Or what the French call les incompétents.
That was funny.
Any ideas?
No, I don't know.
All right, well, the American remake of that one was Some Like It Hot.
I was way off.
All right.
Woo.
That true is my lesson, that you Americans are so stupid. But you're all wonderful people, and I love you all. And I hope you have a very merry, merry Christmas. All right, John Paul, you're being an asshole. You need to get out of here. Merry Christmas, Brian. I love you. All right, John Paul, get out of here. All right. You're going to get me banned from the show. Get out of here. All right.
Well, I think that I won the game there, but, you know, I'm not going to take the opportunity to promote first, since I am the host. So I will give the honor to the one person on the show that is not a stupid American. So, Getter, you can go first.
Stupid European. There weren't any Estonian remakes in that. That's why I didn't know this.
I know. I'm sorry, Karen.
I don't think there are any Estonian remakes. But anyway, I have actually two plugs. First, me, Sophia, and Nick have been excellent this month. We've come up with two podcast episodes at Across the Universe podcast. That's a lot for us. The first one is actually a two-part review of Normal People, which is the BBC and Hulu series. If I do say so myself, I hosted that episode. It's the best we've ever been. It's a very good episode. We go into spoilers, so that's a warning. And then the second episode, we discussed Mank, which was the highly anticipated Fincher movie. Heads up, I didn't like it. So you can listen to more of my thoughts on the episode as well. And then the second one, I've mentioned it a few times here today. I'm doing a Bad Christmas Advent Calendar challenge where I watch 24 bad Christmas movies in 24 days. I did not expect them to be so bad that I'm now behind and I have to watch about 5 movies a day. So that is I don't even know how time works. That is over 5 hours of bad Christmas movies, which is like the Netflix one, Hallmark ones, Lifetime ones.
That's
help
insurance
me.
Right there, Getter. That's bold. That's bold of you.
Everybody keeps asking me, why do I torture myself? The answer is, I don't know. If I knew it, I'd stop. But you can read my reviews and stuff on Twitter and on Letterboxd. I'm Meta Ray in both places. And then at around Christmas, there will be like a bigger post on my blog as well.
Do you have like just one bad Christmas movie that you can recommend to me?
Oh, there's so many.
Just one. Just the one they would like really.
Yeah, the thing is, I decided to watch every Christmas movie that has Christmas in the title. So basically, just you can play like a game. You go like Christmas shoe. Okay, let's watch the Christmas shoe. A Christmas ornament. Okay, let's watch that. There's like a lot of like randomized titles for these Christmas movies. So you can pick any object in your house, and there's probably a Christmas movie about that object.
I may wait till I read your reviews.
That reminds me of a year or two ago, I was at my local library and they put up a display of DVD titles for Christmas. And it's like, here's some Christmas titles. And, you know, there was stuff in there like White Christmas and, you know, Christmas Carol and things like that. And then sitting there was Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. And I was like, that shouldn't be there. But anyway, I digress. Vern, what do you have to promote?
Oh, yay. Well, first of all, Cinema Recall is doing very well. We are in the midst of doing our De Palma December, talking about a different movie from director Brian De Palma. We just released Carrie this last week. And I believe next week we're going to be releasing Phantom of the Paradise. So look for those episodes at cinemarecall.net. I'm also doing editing work for a show called For's a Crowd, which is an audio sitcom series, and I'm doing editing work on that. And go check that out at Forza Crowd Pod, I believe. Look it up on your interwebs, your dial-up modem there. Yeah, Forza Crowd Podcast, good times. Also, I want to give a shout-out here to the Let's Chat podcast team from Bacon Be part of their affiliates program, and that's been really cool. Yeah, just Cinema Recall. We're on Twitter at @cinema_recall. Yes, hoping to start a new audio drama series on that network later on next year. But yeah, that's basically all I have to really plug right now.
All right. Damien, what do you have?
Just my podcast/blog, RileyOnFilm.com. And I just lately I have access to a lot of independent and semi-independent, more mainstream horror movies like before they're released. So I'm using that as an opportunity to not only write on them for sites, but whenever I get those new movies, I'm doing a podcast about them. So you can go back probably about 7 months I've been doing that, but it's pretty exciting right now. I got three exciting new movies I'm going to be podcasting about. So stop on by.
All right, excellent. And Heather, anything to promote?
Soon, yes. Actually, Kai and I have been working on side projects for the last 2 months. He's been working on some of his art stuff, and I'm actually writing a book right now. But we will be picking up the Milkcast again in January. So hopefully you'll be able to hear some more of our ridiculousness there. And actually, right now, if you'd like to hear me and Vern, we just did a fun little spot on Jason Soto's show, Whatever with Jason Soto.
It was
a Christmas special. It was a Christmas special, and it's on, I think, Patreon. Is that correct, Vern?
It's right now on Patreon, yes. Thank you, Heather, for mentioning that. Yes, the Jason Soto Whatever Christmas special is an amazing festive time.
It's really funny, guys.
It's like a variety show of Christmas time, just
it's tons of skits that are just outrageous and hilarious because Soto is the bomb. But that's it for now.
All right, and as for me, you can find my blog Forgotten Films over at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. That's also where you'll find links to my podcast, The Forgotten Filmcast. We've got a new episode out with Jeanette Ward where we talk about the film Original Gangstas. So you can check that out right now. A new episode of Walt Sent Me is going to be hitting in the next few days here, where we talk about a 1991 thriller starring Goldie Hawn called Deceived. And then shortly after Christmas, we're going to be hitting with an episode about Soul, because that's going to be premiering on Disney Plus on Christmas Day, and we're going to be taking a look at that. And then check out my other blog, which has nothing to do with movies. It's called In and Around Denver. It's where I basically just take pictures and talk about some of the cool stuff here in the Denver area where I live. That's at iadenver.blogspot.com. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining us for this Christmas episode. I want to thank all of our guests. The Vern, thank you for being here.
Wonderful time of the year. So I'm trying to do background music there.
Oh, that's okay. Damien, thank you for being with us.
Hey, good being with you again, Todd.
And Getter, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And here's Estonian greeting.
And Heather, thank you as always.
Hey guys, I'm not afraid anymore. Merry Christmas.
And yes, all of our listeners, have a Merry Christmas, holiday season. Be safe, have fun out there.
You've been listening to The Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on The Lambcast, contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell! Go to hell.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.